the Fan on Demand.
Three minutes after 7 o'clock on this last Sunday in September. Good morning. My name is David Grossman. It's going to be 21 degrees, a high today. Rain late in the day. Sounds like it's going to rain all week, too. So, have a nice day. The show is called Sunday Morning. Feels like a fall day out. And if you're one of those who heads out to the fairs, you like that kind of stuff, have some fun. And if you're going apple picking, I used to do that when I was a little younger. You know, you eat a dozen while you're picking, and then you have a stomach ache later on in the day. You know what I'm talking about. Have some fun anyway. Whatever you're doing, keep us tuned in. Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590. Now, let's just say you're a fan of pro sports. You keep in mind that those athletes had to start somewhere. They just didn't parachute automatically into the NFL or the NHL or whatever. Maybe a club, a team. College, university. And on the show this morning, we're going to have a number of what I like to call some great stories. And you can also pitch in with your comments via email to me at sundaymorning@fan590, or you can add me to your Twitter list at GrossmanFan590. And we're always interested in hearing stories that may be worth sharing with our listeners. And I remember last year, this time, a young female distance runner was basically winning everything at the university level. So I called McMaster University in Hamilton to find out about Jessica Perro and learn that she is no longer there. She's now at U of T and not competing, focusing more on her studies. Well, good for her. I mean, everybody's got their own plan and agenda. But don't think McMaster lost out. And what I mean by that is, as good as she is, they've got others, and they're loaded. And one of the great athletes you're going to hear a lot about is Victoria Coates, who won the Canadian 19 and under championship last year. Not the university or rinky-dinky high school race. I mean, this is a national championship and has big plans for this year as well. And she was in a race yesterday in London, Ontario, the University of Western Ontario Invitational. We're going to find out how she and the rest of the McMaster women's team did. Is a ranked number 2 in Canada behind Guelph. I understand it was one heck of a race, one heck of a meet. And Victoria is joining us at this moment. How are you doing, Victoria?
Good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And good morning, and thanks for getting up just a bit early for us.
No problem.
I guess at your age, it's a lot easier than us old guys here. So Jessica's gone, left McMaster. Spotlight is on you and others, and you're one of them touted to do very well. As mentioned, the Western Invitational, I think you had 4 or maybe 5 runners finish yesterday in the top 10. Lindsey Carson, Jill Wyman, Courtney Patterson, so my math is off, 4,
yeah.
And yourself.
Four, yeah.
How do you feel about finishing 7th?
It was a good race. It was a good first race. Definitely something to improve on, but it was a good first race, and our team did really well for the first race.
Yeah, well, last year, McMaster won this, the UWO. This year,
it
came short by 2 points. I mean, 2 points. Nothing like getting blown away, but 2 points. So you sort of re-examine and say to yourself, we could have done better. Let's look at it for next meet. And that's the interesting point, is that the cross-country season amounts to, I think they have 10 invitational races. Were you in any of the previous ones in Sudbury, Montreal, and Kingston?
No, this was our first race. So it was really the first one to get things going. We're not really sure where we're at, but it was a good first start, I guess. So.
Interesting story about you. First year at McMaster, it wasn't the rookie jitters that had you way down the pack at the Canadian University Cross Country Finals. It was more of a health issue. Can you explain to our listeners what it was and how you found out?
Coming into my first year, I started out at Western with a pretty good race, and then as the season went on, I started to sort of get progressively worse, which is exact opposite of what you want to do, and I ended up coming 98th in my first year at the CIS Championships, And my coach suggested I get my iron tested because it's something very common in female runners to have low iron. And I found out that my iron was low. And so now I'm basically started taking supplements, and that's just really helped me a lot. And in addition to the training and getting used to the new training with Nick Master, I've had great improvements from that.
I would imagine if you you come into a race with high expectations and you finish 98th, you got to be saying to yourself, something is off. I wonder what it is. Was it the coach who came to you, or was it you that went to the coach?
It was my coach, Rory. He's seen it before in his other runners. It's pretty common. So he could just tell by the way I was just fading that it's probably iron.
let me understand this, Victoria Coates, McMaster University student. So now you legally pop a pill or supplements, right?
Yeah.
And I want to stress the fact that it's legal.
Oh, yeah.
To boost your iron levels.
Yeah.
And last year, you placed fifth among Canadian female distant runners. Quite a difference over 12 months.
Yeah. So it's not all low iron, but that was definitely had a big impact on me. And, yeah, so I do take a supplement, and it helps me keep my iron levels where they're supposed to be. And, you know, I've had consistent training, and it's really paid off.
Some people are going to listen to this and say, well, why doesn't she take two of those?
Maybe
she'll move up a couple more levels. I guess you have to be reasonable about this whole thing, right? All right. You're from Newmarket. McMaster University is a little bit away. You have an opportunity to go to schools in the Toronto area and et cetera. What made you select Mac?
I really actually, aside from it's a great academic school, the running really did draw me in. They had a young up-and-coming team. They were moving up. They came fourth at CIs in my last year of high school, and my club coach actually used to coach the head coach of cross-country at McMaster. So he knew that the training was really great and it was a good team, so that was just something that really drew me to McMaster.
You come across as not the kind of athlete who likes to gloat on personal achievement. You're more focused on the team approach. Am I right?
Yeah, well, the great thing about cross country is that there is a big team aspect. And so this year, our big goal is we want to improve from last year. Last year, we were second as a team at the CIS Championship. And this year, we've got such a strong team. And Guelph has won the CIS Championship for the past 6 years in a row. And they're so strong. But this year, we feel like it's really our shot to give them a run for the gold medal.
Why don't you just say it? You feel like it's time for a change.
Yeah,
you feel like the Marauders deserve to get up there and Guelph can sit back just a bit. Now, let me ask you, though, if you're a team kind of an athlete, I mean, you put the team ahead of yourself. Individuals need to also do well. And I'm told that you could be considered the heir apparent to Jessica Pero. Is that pressure something that you're feeling or not feeling?
Well, I definitely feel like a bit of individual pressure because you have to perform individually, but not quite feeling the Jessica Pero pressure yet.
Well,
maybe
you were
a couple of years.
You did win the Canadian 19 and under championship last year.
Yeah.
That's a pretty big event.
It was. It's actually the first race that I ever won was that race.
Is there an off season for you, or is distance running 12 months of the year?
It is pretty much 12 months of the year. There's a little bit of a break between cross country and indoor track, and then a bit of a break between indoor track and outdoor track, but we're pretty much training full year round.
Weather is ideal now, but as the season progresses, there can be a lot of rain, there can be cold. Does that matter to you? I mean, do you run better? Obviously, it sounds as if you can run better in ideal conditions, but do you tend to run better even in the rain?
I prefer to run in nice conditions, but actually the Canadian Junior Championship last year was in a snowstorm, and I did well in that too. So I guess it doesn't really affect me that much, but it's definitely nicer to run in
your mission. I understand your mission is once they say go, your mission is to get to the finish line as fast as you can.
Right.
And there you go. You were a first-team All-Canadian. You're now studying political science in your third year at McMaster. There's this label associated with your name, as I said, this Canadian under 19 championship. How much do you want to be the Canadian University individual gold medalist?
Well, it might be a bit of a stretch for this year, but this year what we're really focused on is the team, and that's my goal for this year. But I definitely want to improve on what I did last year, and I really want to be an first-team All-Canadian as well.
And eventually, I would imagine, before you graduate, you want to be number one in the country. That's what
nice.
Every athlete, I mean, they all want to achieve the highest level. You just don't want to come out and say it, though. I'm also told that athletes get nervous before a big game. You know, everything's on the line. You got a lot of crowds. People are staring. Is that true for Victoria Coates before university cross-country run?
Oh, for sure. It's very nerve-wracking. It's good. Once you get going, I'm fine. But, like, the whole build-up before the race is really tough.
Diet, I would imagine. Nutrition, very important for a distance runner?
Yep.
So you're not going to bulk down a couple of hamburgers just before a race?
Well, I don't know. I eat pretty well, and I think, you know, hamburgers aren't necessarily a bad thing, but all in moderation. And
when you look at this cross-country season, do you set a pattern? Do your coaches help you and say, all right, here's event number one. Let's see how you do. Be careful of the injuries. Let's gradually work up towards what will be October 29th in Ottawa, the Ontario University Finals. And then from there, full blast 2 weeks later, November 12th in Quebec City for the national finals. Is that basically the way they stage it?
Right, yeah. Our training program is really focused on helping the athletes peak at the right time. So, you know, we maybe start out a little bit slower, but by the time the OUAs and CIS championships come around, I should be right where I want to be.
You must have tucked away some personal goals. What are they?
Definitely at the OUA championship, I want to be an OUA All-Star again, which is the top seven. And also at the CIS championship, I want to be an All-Canadian. So basically just I want to improve from last year and just help out our team to do the best that we can this year.
You got your head on the right way. Good luck to you. Very much appreciate, again, you getting up early this morning, talking to us about McMaster University, its cross-country program for women, and how you're an integral part of the success of that team. Thanks again very much. Good luck to you.
Great. Thank you.
Victoria Coates, distance runner and a student, good in academics at McMaster University. Coming up next, we're going to talk some baseball. And he pitches for a team and is also the team trainer. And get this, he's in his sixth year of post-secondary studies. That's right, sixth year. Eligibility is not an issue. Stay with us. We'll tell you all about him, how he did yesterday, and a lot more. My name is David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Sing with them, sing for the year, sing for the left, sing for the tear. Sing with them, just for today.
22 minutes after 7 o'clock on this Sunday morning. My name is David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. I promised you a bit of baseball, and we're tracking down our next guest. Going to be a great day. Lots to do. Take us with you in the car. And if you have one of those transistor radios, remember those? Worth a lot of money now. I'll buy it from you. Let's quickly go through the OUA football schedule. What happened yesterday? McMaster scored 34 unanswered points in the second half. That's right. They were down 13-3 to Guelph. It was Guelph's homecoming, and Mac spoiled it. They come out 37-13 victorious on that one. Outstanding performance, again, by Marshall Ferguson, the quarterback, I guess, number two at the start of the season, now taken over as number one, scoring for, I think it was 236 yards, which was not a bad day. Ottawa just choked Toronto, 41-0 in the nation's capital. And it was Windsor over Waterloo, 37-13. Queens over York, 63-3 at York's homecoming. And Western Laurier probably had the best game of the day, with Western winning, remaining undefeated, 34-28, with Laurier having another opportunity for the win in the last minute. And, of course, Western picks it off. Bust the bubble for Laurier. It should be a big game next week, Laurier and Ottawa. Laurier has to win that, celebrating their 100th anniversary. If they don't, chances of a playoff look very, very bleak for them. Well, we talked about baseball, and our next guest is a student at Durham College in Oshawa. He's on the team. And get this, not only is he a pitcher, but he's also the trainer. And Julian Delgado had, he gave up three hits yesterday over five innings. It was a 4-3 win for Durham over St. Clair. And he's joining us now from his hotel room in Windsor, where the team has had a few games this weekend. Julian, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Very well, thank you. Now help me figure this out.
Yep.
What takes up more of your time? Is it pitching for the Durham College Lords or keeping your teammates healthy?
Well, considering I guess I only pitch one every five games, I think it's keeping my teammates healthy.
Other than sore arms, are there any major injuries suffered by college baseball players?
No, not yet. He has some pulled muscles here and there. A lot of icing to go around, but that's about it.
Let me ask you something. If you told one of your teammates, you know what, you got to sit out a game, would they listen to you?
I don't know. They might put up an argument with me, but I have to tell them how it is, I guess.
In the season opener for Durham College, you didn't waste any time sending a signal very quickly. You threw a seven-inning no-hitter against York. It was 8-0, final score. You gave up, I think it was one walk, 12 strikeouts.
Yeah.
Were you waiting to let it all go, if you know what I mean? You know, did you have this feeling that this was going to be one of those days where every pitch was going your way, the dream had come true, or did York just come out in this game, as you would say, flat?
I think it was a combination of both. I felt really good in the bullpen, and coming into the game, the first inning I struck out the side, so after that, I felt like I had my stuff was on. And so
you're from the
just a great feeling.
You're from the Whitby area, which I guess Durham is not far, being in Oshawa. Why do they call you the impact pitcher?
The impact pitcher.
Have you ever heard of that before?
No.
All right. Some of your teammates refer to you as the impact pitcher. And that is a label that's been given to you because they can count on you for the win, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The Lords
are
now, they played eight games, seven wins, one loss. You haven't lost this year.
No.
What, do you think it's just they rely on you too much?
No, I think I've been here for, this is my sixth year now. And so I think I just have that that history. And I guess I've learned to pitch in these situations before. And so I can tough through anything and pitch my game.
Julian Delgado is joining us, a student at Durham College. Is it Durham, or are you at the Ontario University Institute for Studies Technology?
I'm at UIT.
All right. That we have to explain, because some people are scratching their heads wondering, he's in his sixth year of college.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
happened? Obviously, you're studying. You're taking your master's program.
Yeah.
Begs the question, are you going to come back next year for a PhD?
I'm thinking about it, but I don't know. 7 years of college baseball might be a little much. I think this is my final year here.
Now, there are no rules in this baseball league when it comes to eligibility. Is that right?
No, there's no eligibility.
So you could be playing baseball for the combination of Durham and the Ontario Institute for Studies for another 5, 6, 7 years if you wanted.
Potentially.
Yeah.
Potentially, I could play up to 10 years because a PhD would be 4 more years.
I don't think you're going to do that, though, right?
No, I don't know if my arm could handle that.
Doubleheader this weekend. St. Clair College, you had two games in Windsor. You won them both 4-3, and not you personally. You got the win in the first game, 4-3.
Yep.
Your teammates won the second game, 8-3. Now you face the University of Windsor, who is new to the league. Any idea on how strong they could be?
They're not a bad team. We played them last weekend, actually, and we split with them. I think we beat ourselves up more in the game that we lost than anything, though. So hopefully we just come out strong tomorrow and play well defensively, and I think we should do fine.
You're done for this road trip, right?
Yeah, I'm not going to be pitching tomorrow.
Do you have an opportunity to play a position?
No, I don't play another position.
So you're totally a pitcher?
Yeah, just strictly pitching.
Five times to the national playoffs in the Canadian League. Could this be the year that Durham College wins the whole thing?
You know what? Our team looks amazing this year. Really good. Probably the strongest team I've been on since I've been here in all 6 years. We have guys that could hit for average. I mean, I would say probably everyone in our batting line is batting over 300 by the looks of it. And so we play well defensively. We have amazing pitching. So I think this is it.
Your team benefits from having the opportunity to use players from both academic institutions.
Yeah.
Do you consider that to be a little bit unfair for the rest of the league?
I don't think so. I mean, both schools are relatively small. We face people like York who have, I don't know, 70,000 people. And so I think the combination of both might be just about like 16,000 students. So it's not that big of a pool to get players from.
I'm told that you have the highest academic grade point average in the college or in the university or a combination of both of them. You're now studying health sciences. What's the career plan for you?
I'm thinking of applying for physiotherapy after, so I guess I can continue on my training afterwards.
Your coach, Sam Dempster, tell us a little bit about how he has improved your game.
Sam Dempster is a great coach. I mean, he just has a lot of knowledge to give, and I mean, he's always trying to help the players, and it's just fantastic to have a coach like that.
The opposing teams, is there someone who's come at you this year a little bit stronger than others?
I mean, St. Clair yesterday was a tough battle. I mean, pitching against them, they were gritty. They didn't like to get struck out. They were battling up at the plate, and so it was just kind of tough to pitch against them. But, I mean, we pulled through it.
College-university games, with the exception of, shall I say, football at certain schools, and maybe during the indoor season, basketball a bit. When it comes to crowds, it's hard. I mean, they for some reason, they just don't attract enough fans.
Yeah.
Does that bother you as an athlete, as a student athlete?
A little bit. I mean, we play off campus too, so it's hard to expect the students to come down and watch us. But at the same time, it does bother us a little bit. I mean, we're a really good team. We've made the Nationals 5 times in the past 6 years, so...
Well, that's my point.
It'd be nice to get the little recognition.
Yeah, I mean, that's my point. You have a team here who is not just a bunch of guys put together and they play a game. I mean, it's very, very talented,
yeah.
And you've proved it. And now here you are in Windsor, which is across the river from the state of Michigan. One would think that they're hungry for sport, that part of the country.
Yeah.
Do you get any kind of attendance yesterday, or are expectations today a little bit bigger with the University of Windsor over, shall I say, playing St. Clair College?
Yeah, I'm not sure if their diamond is close to the school anyways, but yesterday it wasn't a big crowd either. I mean, at Nationals, there's always a bigger crowd, but nothing too crazy.
In addition to being a baseball player and also being a trainer and making sure your grades are up to par in this master's program that you're taking, I'm just wondering if my eyes are giving me a little bit of a problem here reading this, but are you also a teaching assistant too in
yes.
Something that's called, I hope I get this one right, musculoskeletal biomechanics?
I am.
What
I
is that?
Biomechanics. It's the physics of movement pretty much. And I TA the lab. So I just try to help out the students.
Movement, does that mean something like pitching as well and performance, or completely
yeah.
opposite?
No, it could be. So it's the study of movement, and so it could be any type of movement. So pitching could be one of them.
How did you get started in the sport of baseball? Was this something that came to you naturally, or is it by fluke?
Well, my parents started me off very young. I mean, I didn't start pitching until I was probably 17. And so I think that kind of helped my arm out a bit, but.
And you've always been, you've always been at the university, or did you start at Durham?
No, I did. I've always been at the university. I did my 4-year bachelor's program there in health science.
I could just imagine some other universities who'd want you to be taking your master's program with them. It's going to be an interesting season for you and the rest of the Durham College baseball team. Is there a certain part of the schedule where you as a pitcher, I mean, you can map out the season itself where you're going to be called upon the most. What's the what kind of allowance as far as a time frame does Coach Dempster give you when it comes to pitching? Are you pitching like once a week, twice a week?
Yeah, it's usually once a week. I mean, we play 5 games a week and we have pretty much a 5-man rotation set up right now. When it comes to Nationals, though, I'll have to make sure my arm's in good check. Just in case he needs to call on me consecutive days. So.
Now, are there limitations? Are you just strictly a starter, or can you come in relief as well?
No, I can come in relief if need be.
Do you have a preference?
I would much rather prefer to start, but it just gives me more time to warm up.
Tell us a little bit about the pitches that I would think seem to be going well for you this year. Is there a favorite that you have?
My curveball is actually working pretty well. It's moving a lot, and so it's catching some players off guard.
Confidence and failure, two strong words. Are they both something that's contagious to an athlete?
A little bit, I would say. You have to be confident to a point, but you don't want to be cocky at the same time. And so I think losing the win through last weekend was one of the best things that could happen to us, because, I mean, we went undefeated last year going into nationals, made it to the semifinals, and then lost our first game there. So, I mean, getting that loss early in the season, I think, would smarten us up right now and make sure that doesn't happen again.
Little things. What's one that's changed the way you pitch?
Pardon? Sorry?
Little things. You know, it just maybe the movement, the way you throw the ball. What's one that's really changed the way you pitch that's made you a better player?
You know what? I try to pitch smarter now. When I was younger, I used to try to overpower player batters. And so I find that just the biggest thing is trying to hit spots and make sure I don't throw anything too much over the plate.
Julian, we got to move along. We appreciate your time this morning. Good luck today against the University of Windsor.
All right, thanks a lot.
You're very welcome. Julian Delgado, pitcher for the Durham College Lords. And next up on the show, we're going to talk to a Canadian and find out what it's like living 13 of her 18 years in the United States. How different is it to be a jock in the country of the red, white, and blue as compared to Canada? We're going to take a pause for a commercial break. Sports update. It's Sunday morning. My name is David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Make your friends weep with envy. Win wicked prizes inside the fan club. Join today at fan590.com.
Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. All right, everybody, get up now. Wakey, wakey. My name is David Grossman. The show is called Sunday Morning, and we're here for you. The production team, Igor Enriquez, in charge of the show. Dan Riccio, making sure, as the director of technical operations, that Igor is in charge of the show. And both of them making sure that I know what I'm talking about. That's a tough challenge. That's right. I had a conversation this week with a high school teacher. He's angry. He's upset. I mean, he's fuming. And his comment is that the media don't care about school sports. And you know what? He's right. But what I told him ticked him off even more. That it's the schools, that it's his colleagues that are the fault. That's the problem. From athletic associations to boards of education to coaches, they just don't know how to communicate. They don't care. Now, we've covered school sports on the station now for 20 years, more than any other radio station. And we're 3 weeks into the school year, and what we hear is next to nothing, which is terrible. Now, that's my opinion, but it's an opinion that's shared with a lot of others, parents, even some teachers, athletes, and you have one too. So if you agree with me or disagree, email me at sundaymorning@fan590.com or send me a message at Twitter. That's right. You can send me a message there. GrossmanFan590. Now, one guy who does care, and let's hope it's not just when his team wins, is the head football coach at Brother Andre Catholic High School, Trevor Weir. And he's been telling me about Aaron Mitchell Baker. Watch out for this guy. The Ontario Varsity Football League MVP, one of the dominant football players in this province. 22 of 28 points yesterday from him. A touchdown rushing, a touchdown receiving, a touchdown on defense. He forced a fumble. And he had two 2-point converts as well. Final score, Brother Andre 28, Huron Heights 24. It was the first regular season loss for Huron Heights in about 5 years. And not a word from the losing coach. I wonder why. Anyway, enough of that. Melissa Villar is standing by. She's a student at George Brown College right here in Toronto. She wants to be a nurse. Maybe one day she'll take care of me. Who knows? She plays basketball for the Huskies, and she grew up in Tennessee before returning to Canada, where she was born, and she's joing us right now. How you doing, Melissa?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Bright and cheerful. That's what I like to hear on this early Sunday morning. You're 18 years old, and 13 of those years were spent in Memphis, Tennessee, where your father worked. I would imagine sports down there in Tennessee, and specifically in Memphis, is quite a bit different from what we have here in Toronto. Am I right or am I wrong?
You're very right.
Tell us about it.
Well, the competitive level is way higher, and like the work ethic between athletes is like way higher. And so coming down here was kind of like a shock.
A shock?
Yeah.
All right, tell us about the work ethic, you know, the game mentality. No team likes to lose. I don't care what country the team plays in. But I've heard stories that some American schools, after a loss, it's like the end of the world has just happened. Is that the feeling that you received when you were down in Memphis?
Well, my high school coach expected us to cry after a loss. So it's pretty intense down there.
Expected you to cry after a loss?
Yes.
Okay. That one I haven't heard before. You finished your high school education here in Toronto, a school known for basketball success, Mother Teresa, right here in the east end of the city. What goes through your mind when teenagers do a lot of yakking about how wonderful it is to play in the United States? And maybe it is in certain parts of the country, but you've experienced it. Is it wonderful?
Personally, to me, I loved it down there, but when I see some of those guys and I saw them practice, I'd be like, you're not going to survive down there. Because, first off, their work ethic is nothing compared to the athletes down there.
Is it like 24-7, work, 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 sport, sport, sport?
Yes.
You've never seen anything like it?
No.
Melissa Villar is our guest, a guard on the George Brown College women's basketball team. Are you telling me that you don't have the same kind of work ethic at George Brown that you had back in Memphis?
I mean, we do, but back home in Memphis and high school, you're going for that college scholarship, unlike down here where there's not a lot of college scholarships, because in Memphis they give you the full ride. And so here, most people don't work as hard because they don't have that big of a chance of getting that full ride up here than they do compared to the States.
Melissa, you were sixth off the bench at Memphis Harding Academy, a high school.
Yes.
Now, share with our listeners what happened in your last senior game at Memphis Harding. No playing time. You were the only player of Filipino descent on the team. Any idea as to why you didn't play in that senior game?
No.
Come on now.
I have no idea, actually.
You must have been shocked, though.
Yes.
Did you go to the coach? Did you ask anybody?
No, because I had to leave and come back to Canada right after the game.
What was the reasoning for that?
The reasoning to...
To leave right after the game.
Well, we wanted to make it up back in time for Christmas. So it's a long ride up to Canada. So
okay.
We had to leave right after.
Now, and your team went on to win the state championship, too.
Yes.
I'm not exactly sure what student-athletes in Canada have to say when an American comes here for schooling. But I'm curious on what the message was like when you told them down in Memphis, Tennessee, that you were a Canadian and you wanted to play basketball.
Well, it was kind of a shock to them that I was Canadian in the first place. But most of the time it'd come in the middle of the school year. And so they'd just be like, oh, yeah, Melissa's Canadian. And I'd be like, yeah, guys. But then I come up here, born in Canada, and people call me American. So it's kind of flip-flop now.
What did they think down there? Did they, that you had horns and all you wore were snowshoes and that's it? You played hockey?
And that I lived in an igloo and saw a moose every day.
Oh, that was the commentary?
Yes.
In Memphis, Tennessee?
Yes.
Educated?
Very.
A point guard, that's what you are. You're also a shooting guard.
Yes.
When it came time to leave Tennessee, you didn't want to. I mean, you were telling me the other day that you're leaving all your friends behind, people you had grown up with. You despised the thought of saying goodbye to Tennessee and coming back to where you were born, here in Canada.
Mm-hmm.
But all that changed when you picked up a program at George Brown College called nursing, and the atmosphere that you received from the coaching staff and others. What was it that made you happy to be going to George Brown and somewhat forgetting about the experience down in Tennessee?
Well, the athletic community in general at George Brown is very close, just like back home. And that's what I really love about George Brown. And no matter what, with schoolwork, with life, or with sports in general, they're always there to help me out. So that's what I really love about George Brown.
An academic award winner, that's you. You're on the Dean's List in Tennessee. How was that connection made between Memphis and George Brown College here in Toronto? What was it that made you decide to go to George Brown and not some other school, whether it's a university or college?
Well, at first I was on wait list because I registered too late because I moved from Tennessee in December and apparently registration was already closing. And so actually what made me decide to go to George Brown was Sharon Butler, our coach. And she's a great coach and a great person in general.
I would imagine you needed those extra credits at Mother Teresa as well.
Yes.
So here you are now at George Brown, a member of the basketball program. You go into the gym. Facilities at George Brown as compared to the United States, about the same or different?
Facility-wise, very different. The gym is, I love our gym, but it's tiny. But compared to the States is like high school gyms have like stadium seatings. The walls are like sky high. I remember I walked into U of T's gym and I was like, my high school gym is bigger than this. And they have a pretty big gym.
Where do you see Melissa Villar when it comes to the George Brown College women's basketball team this year? Are you just one of the members of the squad? Is Sharon Butler and the coaching staff looking as to you as being a leader on this team? Explain to us where you see your role.
Well, coming off last year, and coach has talked to me about this. She wants to see me more as a leader, especially since we don't have that much of returning experience. We have more rookies coming in than we do veterans. And so coach wants me to help and communicate with the rookies and get them into the program, get their feet set, understand what we want them to do in the long run.
November 4th, I believe, and I stand to be corrected on this, appears to be the opening game for George Brown in women's basketball. Do you know if that's correct?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. I got something right. The Huskies are in Kingston against St. Lawrence College. How strong is this George Brown team this year as compared to maybe the squad of the previous year?
I'm excited for this year. We just came off our game from Sheridan, and it was a wake-up call to a lot of us. But we just need to come together because we have so much talent this year, and I'm so excited.
When you say a wake-up call against Sheridan, what happened?
We got blown out. And, well, some of the rookies, Sheridan's a run-and-gun team, and lungs were burning.
I would imagine if you're back in Memphis, Tennessee, the coach would have expected you to cry.
Oh, she would have expected us to hang our heads down in shame.
1980, 21 years ago. Before you were born was when George Brown College last won an Ontario Colleges Athletic Association women's basketball gold medal. Do you find, from what you see, Melissa, that players are attracted to the school because of the team and trying to rebuild a program, or are they attracted there because of the academic programs?
I think it's because of the academic programs. George Brown has great academics. Like nursing is, we finish top in our nursing exams. We have the great culinary program, and then we have a great art and design program. So,
the OCAA three-point shooting contest last year, you finished, where was it, third place?
Yes.
How exciting was that for you?
It was very exciting. My hands were shaking the whole time I tried to shoot the ball, so my nerves were on end.
How many were you able to sink, and what was the time period?
We had 1 minute, 30 seconds or a minute, and we had five racks with five balls each, and I think the highest I got was 15.
Where do you see basketball fitting into your life when you finish George Brown, graduate, you're now a nurse?
Basketball will always be in my life, no matter what, because basketball, as long as I've known, has been my life. And so afterwards, maybe to keep me in shape, to relieve stress, because that's what it does now. So,
Good luck to you, not only on the basketball court, but also in the classroom as well. Thanks for sharing the experience of what it was like growing up in the United States playing basketball in Tennessee and having to cry when you lose a game. And now here you are at George Brown College helping to rebuild a program. All the best to you.
Thank you.
Melissa Villar, interesting story. Wow, can you just imagine that? Forced to cry after you lose a game? The mentality of some individuals and some coaches. One of the top scorers in Canadian University soccer is coming up next. It's Sunday morning. My name is David Grossman. We continue after a sports update. This is Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
It's time for the Dean of College Sports. Attendance will be taken. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman. Sportsnet Radio. The Fan 590.
Couple of minutes after 8 o'clock, to be sure, 8:02 and 14 seconds, 15, 16, you can adjust your clock. Well, let me ask you, do you play the game of tennis, like maybe for fun? If you do, I just got to brag, I'm a champion, but on my home computer, that's about it. On the real court, Racquetball, yes, I do well. Squash, okay, I'll do that too. Specialty, of course, is swimming. But tennis, no. I'm just not good at that. It's as simple as that. I'm admitting it. Jesse Levine, though, he is very good. I saw him play the other day at the Mayfair Clubs in Thornhill. And I was hanging around Irwin Tobias, who's the president of the place, CEO. I mean, he does everything there. And he told me that this young man was worth watching. So I said, okay, how good is he? And he says, he's good. Watch him and you know what I'm talking about. So I started and I got dizzy quickly. You know, when you watch the ball go left and right, left and right, left and right, eventually you just say, that's it. And I gave up because I just was in the mood of getting a headache. But he's good. Jesse Levine is in the final today of the National Bank. They just got a free plug. Futures tournament, and it's hosted by Mayfair up in Thornhill on Woodbine Avenue. And he's up against Peter Polansky, who was on this show yesterday. Today is Sunday morning. I'll be fine. He was on Sports Central yesterday, and he was talking about his experience as a member of the Canadian Davis Cup team. So it should be interesting to see what happens today with two young and very talented Canadian tennis players. Jesse Levine, who was born in Canada, and Peter Polansky, who lives in Canada. And Jesse's on the line with us right now. How you doing, Jesse?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Canadian kid who moved to Boca Raton, Florida, with his family and enjoying what it's like down there. Tell us, why'd you move?
I had nothing to do with my tennis. My whole family moved due to my younger brother. He suffers from ulcerative colitis, and they were doing a bunch of research in Canada at the time and saying that moving to a warm weather climate all year round was much better for his health. And at the time we went for it, my dad had a really good job opportunity, and we wanted to give it a shot for my brother, and things worked out well, and it was just a plus for my tennis. But we never moved just for my tennis or anything like that. I played four sports in high school and was playing as many sports as possible at the time.
Quite a bit different living in Florida as compared to Ottawa.
Yeah, but I miss Ottawa. I still represent my Sens. I saw we had a win last night, 3-2, so over the Habs, so it's always nice to have a win over the Habs.
Be careful. You're in Leaf Nation.
I know. I need to be careful.
Yeah,
it's
and
okay.
We lost, too.
Yeah, but I'll cheer for the Leafs over Buffalo.
There you go. You can repeat that again.
I will cheer for the Leafs over Buffalo.
And maybe over Ottawa, too, one day, right?
I don't know about that one.
Now, you wiped out your fellow countrymen in this tournament. Nicholas Monroe of the U.S. In a quarterfinal, and then Brian Baker in the semifinal. Did that surprise you, or was it really tough going?
Well, Nick and I know each other pretty well. We practiced a lot at a lot of the tournaments over the years, and we had a great match. I played really well, and Nick's been playing well, so it was a great match. Actually, in the semis, I got word after the match in the quarters that Brian wasn't even going to play. So I got a walkover in the semis. It was kind of surprising. So yesterday I just had a practice day, and I didn't have a match yesterday due to Brian pulling out with a shoulder injury.
See, I didn't know that. You should have called me up. I would have played you.
Yeah, I know. We could have practiced.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't want to hurt you or anything in the
Are
game.
Are you rusty?
No. No,
okay,
I would have.
Perfect then, because he was Peter.
I would have called up a friend of mine by the name of Ronich.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I would have asked him to pitch in because he trains and he plays at Mayfair as well. And I would have said, look, I got this guy. He thinks he's pretty good. His name is Levine. You think you can take him out? And chances are Milos would have pitched in. I'm sure he would have.
I know Milos really well.
Yep. There you go.
Yeah.
I would imagine if you win today, you're going to win some money. And do you mind me asking how much the prize is?
Yeah.
A couple hundred bucks or more than that?
No. It's over $1,500 for sure, but I don't know how much the actual total is.
I would imagine you're not going to come all the way from Florida up here to just say hello and get a couple of coins and stick them in your pocket. It's got to be a few bucks, right?
Well, yeah, that and ranking points. So you come for both those.
Where are you ranked now?
After these three tournaments here that I've been here in Canada, I will be up to about 320 again.
Now, you were once in the top 100 in the U.S.
Yeah, I was in the world.
In the world?
Yeah.
And then, what, some injuries, problems?
Yeah, unfortunately, I had a groin injury and then a knee injury that set me back for a little bit. So I'm fully healthy now and coming back and looking to get back in the top 100.
Now, if you play every weekend, depending on your success, I would imagine you could probably make a couple of bucks out of this sport of tennis.
Yeah, that's for sure. I mean, the bigger tournaments, obviously the Grand Slams are the biggest ones, and that has the biggest prize money. As far as these are total prize money for the tournament that is going on now at the Mayfair is $15,000.
So is this what it's all about, making money, or is it helping in the rankings?
Both.
All right.
Both. Some people play to get higher ranks. Some people play to make more money, so you got both going at it.
Maybe I got to hire you to be my coach and teach me how to play tennis.
No, I'm ready. I'm available.
Now, you're a left-handed hitter.
Yes, sir.
Is that an advantage over a righty?
Sometimes. Definitely, I think, is an advantage because people aren't used to playing against left-handed players as much as right-handed players, and the spins are different, and it's just a different look.
You played some junior tennis in Ontario. Do you remember the experience?
Yes, I do. I grew up playing at the OAC in Ottawa and used to probably drive down to Toronto almost every other weekend because that's where the biggest tournaments were. But I remember playing juniors and growing up here in Ottawa and packing in the van, driving to Toronto for the weekend, and then coming back and making it to school for Monday.
Jesse Levine is our guest, Canadian-born, now living in Florida. He's up against Peter Polansky in the championship match of the National Bank Futures, which is being hosted by Mayfair Clubs in Thornhill. Now, Jesse, some people say that it's part of an athlete's image. I'm not talking about tennis. I'm talking about being an athlete. It's part of an athlete's image to go out there and be arrogant, you know, to be cocky, but at the same time, be confident. Do you agree with that?
To some extent. You know, if you look at the top athletes in the world, some of them are very confident, but at the same time, they don't need to be arrogant. I mean, if you look at Roger Federer in the sport of tennis, I don't think he's arrogant at all. I think he's a very confident guy and a very, very well-respected athlete in any sport. So I have to agree, but I'll also disagree that you don't need the arrogance.
Is there pressure, though, for you? I mean, I'm going to call you a marquee athlete. Is there pressure for you to deliver?
As far as...
As a tennis player? I mean, you're going into this final. I mean, it was the expectation on the part of a lot of people in the tennis community to see you in this championship match?
Well, to be honest, I mean, maybe because the last 2 weeks I've been playing really well and I've won the last two tournaments, but you never know. And with tennis, I mean, I was seeded 5 in this tournament, so there was 4 guys seeded ahead of me that were supposed to get there above me. So I really don't feel like there was a pressure point or that kind of expectation for me to have to be in the finals. I didn't feel that.
Now, we all know you reside in the state of Sunshine, Florida, yeah. and you have this allegiance to the United States now. But being a Canadian, I would assume you'd like to make a nice contribution to this country. Is there a chance that maybe you would consider being part of our Davis Cup contingent?
There is a chance, absolutely.
Okay, so where do you stand on that? When do you have to make your mind up, and what's the procedure?
Well, I've talked about it with the president of Tennis Canada, Michael Downey. I really get along with him well. I think he's a great guy, and he's always been very supportive of my tennis career. And we actually just talked the other day briefly at Dan Nestor's charity event, kind of messing around, and because we've talked previously in years past, and we always joke around, but he told me that the door was always open to try and come back and try and make the Davis Cup team. So it's definitely something in my career that I'd love to do, to be a part of a Davis Cup team and represent my country. So it's definitely a possibility. I don't know how soon or how late, but it's there in my head.
Now, how do you think that'll go over with the United States Tennis Association?
That's a good question. To be honest, I don't think it would be that big of a problem right now because I wouldn't make the Davis Cup team in the United States right now. So it's not like they were losing a Davis Cup player or anything like that. So maybe they would wish me luck. Maybe they would have some hard feelings. I really don't know how it would go over.
2 years ago, you had a doubleheader blockbuster. Remember those wins over, I think it was in Wimbledon, and then you had another one over a top 50 player. It was a big year for you 2 years ago.
Yeah. 2009.
Tell us, who was it that you beat?
Murat Safin.
There you go. That's it. That was the name I was thinking about. And wasn't it Pechner?
Yeah, that was at a different tournament, yeah.
But it was same year, though, right?
Yes.
Jesse Levine, pro tennis player, joining us. Canadian-born, living in the United States. As a 13-year-old, you won the U.S. clay court national singles title. And as a 15-year-old, you won the United States Tennis Association, I think it was the boys' doubles championship with your partner. Is that right?
Yes.
And then as a 17-year-old, you're still a teenager. I haven't gotten to where you are now. You won the Wimbledon boys' doubles championship with your doubles partner.
Yes.
So, I mean, playing 1 year after another, I mean, there's a lot of progress for you, especially also at the University of Florida.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time there. That was a special experience, and I think that a lot of people who enjoy tennis need to experience team competition, especially in a college situation. It's an amazing experience.
I understand one of your good friends plays hockey.
Yes.
I used to write stories about him before he even learned how to shave, and that's Jason Spezza.
Yeah, Spezza's a good guy.
How'd your friendship start with him?
I was playing Rogers Cup in Toronto, and he came out, and they had like a ball hockey event with the tennis players and hockey players, and I always wanted to meet him because he plays for my favorite team, the Sens. So the tournament director, Carl Hale, there introduced me to him and thought he was an awesome guy, and he just wanted to talk tennis. It was awesome.
Now, you being up here playing tennis, who's taking care of the dog?
It's with my parents.
All right. I'm sure you call and say hello and see how things are going. I'm told the average tennis player is taller and heavier than you. Does that mean anything?
I would go with that.
Does that mean anything to you?
No, I've been told a lot of times in different sports that I'm too short or not strong enough, but you know what? That just drives me to push harder and prove people wrong.
You got a lot of strengths when it comes to tennis. You're fast, you're explosive. You got this great forehand. Is there something I'm missing?
I don't know. I'm ready to play you, then you can find out.
All right. What time is the final today?
11:30.
Oh boy, that's just around the corner.
Yes.
Well, we appreciate your time. Good luck to you. Great career as well. Remember, you're always from Canada.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. I hope he thinks seriously about being part of the Davis Cup team. Who knows? Maybe he will. Jesse Levine, originally from Ottawa, now living in Boca Raton. He'll be in the final today with Peter Polansky of the National Bank Futures at the Mayfair Clubs in Thornhill. If you get a chance, 11:30, go on over there and check it out. Should be a lot of tennis, a lot of fun. Well, coming up next, we're going to go to the sport of lacrosse. Third-year student at the University of Toronto. He's studying chemical engineering. Yeah, and he plays lacrosse when he's not burning the midnight oil. We'll find out. We're going to take a break. My name is David Grossman. This is, yes, Sunday morning on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
It's Sunday morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Minutes after 8 o'clock on this Sunday morning. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590 is the station. And David Grossman is my name. So let me ask you, are you a lacrosse fan? It is Canada's national summer sport. And it is exciting to watch. Just go to a Toronto Rock game and you'll see what I'm talking about. But it can also be dangerous, just as dangerous as Canada's national winter sport. That's hockey, right? See, a couple of those games, and you know what I'm talking about. By the way, you can follow me on Twitter at GrossmanFan590, or you can email me with whatever's on your mind at SundayMorning@fan590.com. Our next guest, now follow me on this thing. He was born in Montreal. He lived in New Jersey, then in Massachusetts, and is now going to school at the University of Toronto. And he's studying chemical engineering. So chances are his marks are above 50%. And we're going to find out a little bit about him and lacrosse and what he's doing here. Say good morning to Mark Anthony Kukulis. How you doing, Mark?
I'm doing great, Dave. How you doing?
Very well, thank you. Now, I've tried, and believe me, I was up early looking for this, and I couldn't find it. The Canadian University Field Lacrosse Association scoreboard doesn't have the score of your last game. And the University of Toronto, where you are a student, doesn't have the score of the game as well. Why don't you tell us, how did you do yesterday?
We ended up winning against Queens at Queens 9-6.
And did you score a goal?
I did.
One, two?
I had one and two apples.
All right. Was yours the winning goal?
No, not this time. No.
All right. Oh, okay. You'll see the winning goals for certain games, right?
Yeah. You can't get them all.
All right. Today you play Carleton.
We do.
W?
If we play to the best that we can, it'll turn out the same way that we played them last time. So hopefully it'll win.
All right. So you grow up in New Jersey. What's it like, a Canadian, finding out that the Americans play lacrosse better than we do?
Well, at the time, I was younger, so, you know, it didn't really, you know, affect me that much. But coming up here and telling everybody that I was American, everybody was pretty fired up because they knew I would have two left. I mean, I would have both hands, because I guess up here, everybody has one strong hand and then the other, you know, your left hand, it doesn't work well. So.
But hold on a minute. This is our national sport, though. We should be turning out some very good lacrosse players.
And you do. And there are some that are very good. A lot of kids that I know from around here go to a private school. They'll end up going Division I. But the box game is mostly played with your dominant hand, because it's a lot smaller and, you know, nice trick passes and stuff like that.
You're studying chemical engineering. I would imagine there's some universities south of the border in the United States that have that program for study purposes. What made you come here?
I applied to three schools up here, and I ended up getting into Toronto. Me and my dad were looking at, you know, world rankings and stuff like that. They have a pretty good engineering program. I think it was ranked 8th in the world last year. So, I mean, hands down, I was just like, this will be my academic school for sure. And then I met with Joe Nizich, who's a manager of the lacrosse team. I came out to see one of the practices, liked what I saw. It was a young team. You know, we could grow. We could become good. And I was pretty much sold on the school. And then Toronto is an awesome city. So you know what? I had to come here.
You're one of the captains on the University of Toronto men's field lacrosse team. Do you find teammates take to a captain's advice a little bit more so than, or easier, shall I say, than a coach?
Oh, for sure.
Why? Why is that?
Well, because I mean, you develop a friendship with these players. You know, we're all really, really, really close. You know, we hang out all the time. We go out. You know, we try to, you know, have like group meetings before games. Maybe not even like group meetings. We'll just hang out with each other.
But it can very easily go the other side. I mean, you could say something that could really tick off a player.
We tend, I mean, as you know, when you're playing with each other, you tend to react better towards, you know, you're not going to yell at any of your players on the field. You know, you're just going to pull them aside and say, hey, maybe next time, look at me on the backside. You'll see me cutting around. It's not, you know, it's never something negative. We try to stray away from the negativity on the team. And, I mean, with coaches, our coaches, we have great coaches, and the coaches always pick on the positive, and they tend to stay away from the negative stuff, but they will pull you aside, and they will tell you when you need to do something different. You need to change it up. But
everyone has different agendas in a game. What's yours?
Like warm-ups, all, you know, my step-through-step process for getting ready? Or?
No. My point here is your agenda in the game to make sure that you get the ball to somebody who you think is going to score, or is your agenda to go in there and make sure you get 3 goals a game?
I'm more of a I do a little bit of both. I do like setting up plays. That's usually what I do. I tend to get more assists than goals. Except for this year, I'm actually doing pretty well in both categories. But I like being able to dodge my guy, drawing the double, and then dumping it off down to an attackman or a midfielder who's wide open, letting them take the shot. My shot's pretty good this year, though, so we'll see how it goes down the stretch.
Mark Anthony Kakulis is joining us, third-year student at the University of Toronto studying chemical engineering, playing for the U of T men's lacrosse team. Now, the trip yesterday to Kingston to play Queens, not only did you come away with a win, but you must have thought about the trip on the way there. And here's what I mean by that. I mentioned earlier that it can be a physical game. And when you watch lacrosse and some players getting whacked pretty good, you wonder about injuries. And you suffered a concussion in your first year playing lacrosse, and it was against Queens.
Yeah.
How did it happen? And did you know that it was a brain injury at the time?
What happened was is I went to go dodge my guy, and one of my players came around to set a pick on the guy I was trying to dodge. So that guy's guy just rolled right into me, and as I came off the pick, he cleaned my clock, and I ended up flipping over one of my players and hitting my head on the turf. I got up. You know, usually you just want to pop right back up and start walking around, making sure that, you know, everything's okay. We ended up scoring on that. And so I had to go back to take a face-off. And when I bent down to go take the face-off, I couldn't hold my balance, and I just fell over. So I ran off onto the sideline, you know, sat down, tried to start watching the game, you know, take a rest, see if I could go back out. But I just couldn't follow the ball being thrown through the air. I got a side test, and I ended up getting a concussion. At the time, I didn't really, you know it was a concussion because I hadn't gotten one ever before. But it definitely was a little weird experience, and boy, did that guy really ring my bell. He was a big dude.
Are you okay now?
I'm fine now.
I would imagine you have to get a medical clearance before you play a game.
I did, yeah.
Of all the professional athletes in the world, you were asked one day to name your favorite, and for some reason you picked boxer Mike Tyson. Why was that?
He's a pretty damn good actor. He's a funny guy. I mean, if I were to say, my favorite professional sports athlete, probably wouldn't. If I was asked again, it probably wouldn't be him. That was kind of a joke, but
Tyson's a kind of big dude, similar to the one that knocked the bells ringing for you at Queens.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So the women have a bona fide league for field lacrosse in the OUA. Okay, you know that. The question here is, why haven't the men? I mean, it seems as if they've been shafted for some reason. I don't know if it's political or if it's a funding reason, but you now play in this Cuffla League, the Canadian University Field Lacrosse Association, which is even bigger than the OUA League for women, involving Quebec teams. And now, do you have any idea, or for that matter, do you even care why it's not a legitimate league at university?
Do I know why? I honestly really don't. Do I care? Yes. I mean, I love playing this sport, and it would be awesome if we could get a couple more teams in the league to just play. It's odd because I always ask my coaches, you know, what the deal is with this. But, you know, if it's the national sport of Canada, there should be a lot of teams out there, you know. And you got to be playing the sport. Down in the States, it's so big. and you come up here and you know it's the national sport, you'd expect it to be a lot bigger. But that being said, I'm not positive on this, but this is what I've heard. I think there are going to be a couple new teams that'll be added to Kufla, which is.
Are there times when you're sitting in a class at U of T? I used to do this when I went to school. I mean, you're sitting in class. Professor may not be the most exciting one. You're not sure really what's going on in the chemical engineering class of the day, so to speak. And you stare into space and you're thinking about your next lacrosse game. Does that happen for you?
Well, you can't really stray off in chemical engineering. You stray off and you fall behind. You'll end up, you know, it'll come and haunt you. But I always think about the games, especially, you know, a night before a game, like before the Queens game, I was too fired up to go to sleep. So, because I just wanted to get on the field and play with my team. There come times where I'll think about, you know, what happened over the weekend, good plays, if I did something good, or if I have to improve on something during the game. But other than that, I like to I got to keep my head focused on the professor in class.
I would hope so. Brock University and St. Catharines, 18 league titles in lacrosse in the past 26 years, and now McGill appears to be the team to beat. Toronto has never won a league championship. Where is the strength on this U of T team this year? Could it be in scoring? Is it in defense? Or is it somewhere else?
I mean, when you look at our team and you come out and see one of our games, you'll see that we're pretty strong everywhere. We have a very young team. Our defense is very good under our new defensive coach, Tim Weston. Our attack is always scoring goals, and we have depth in the midfield. So, I mean, if, you know, there's any weakness, I don't see it, and our strengths are everywhere. So,
I don't understand why the U of T men's lacrosse team has to play in some dingy field and not get access to the turf at Varsity Center. But maybe that's for somebody else at U of T to answer those questions. I would imagine with soccer and with rugby and with football and center, they probably would take precedent over lacrosse. I can't figure out why. But just before we go, I got to ask you a question, Mark Anthony Kukulis. Big football game today. The Buffalo Bills against some team from your home state of Massachusetts. Somebody called the New England Patriots. Who are you going to be cheering for?
You know, I got to go with my boy, Tom Brady, Rob Gronkowski, and Wes Welker for this one, man. The Patriots are looking pretty good. You know, we'll see what Ryan Fitzpatrick does. He's been playing great, but
close game.
If Ryan Fitzpatrick plays like he has been, I think it'll be a close game.
All right, good luck, Mark, especially today as well. Mark Anthony Kukulis, member of the University of Toronto men's lacrosse team. You play today against Carleton, and hopefully you do well as well. Thanks again for your time.
Hey, thanks, David.
Refresh your morning beverage. Our next guest is from the sport of soccer and a team that's number one in Canada. Stay with us. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
It's Sunday morning with David Grossman, covering the biggest stories in high school, college, and university sports on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
All right, so here's your Sunday morning quiz. Here's the question, really. What sport is more popular with young people in this country? Is it soccer or is it hockey? If you said hockey, you're wrong. Soccer, number one. Good morning. My name's David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Joining us right now, she's from Mississauga. She's playing soccer for Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo. She's considered to be the silent threat. Now, I don't know what that means, but she's scoring goals and lots of them. I mean, she's tied for the lead in the country, so I don't think it's silent anymore. But Laurier has the number one university women's soccer team in Canada. They are unbeaten in 7 games, league champs twice in the past 3 years. Their coach, Barry McLean, must be absolutely thrilled. Laurier beat Waterloo, by the way, yesterday, 4-1. And the last time Waterloo won the battle of those regional universities was in 2005. So you can see how Laurier has dominated soccer in the KW area. And joining us right now is Krista Chalucci, who is, as I said, from Mississauga. How you doing, Krista?
Hi, good. How are you, David?
Very well, thank you. How's university life?
It's great. I love it here.
Well, you only get one shot at it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing here. I love it.
Unless you want to be old like me and then go back to university. I don't think
well,
you
that's
want
an option too.
I don't think you want to do that. You're 5'8". You're a forward. You had two more goals. You lead the league in scoring, as mentioned. I mean, you got more goals. You personally have scored more goals for Laurier than the entire Waterloo team.
Yeah. It's funny to think about.
Yeah, I don't want to rub it into Waterloo, but then again, I mean, they're nowhere near you. Your coach, I've known your coach, Barry McLean, for a long time. And good guy, knows what he's talking about, is always hounding me that we're not giving soccer the attention it deserves. And you know what? Sometimes he's right. Today, he's not. I would think that he's played down this number one title and told the soccer team, number one only comes at the end of the season when the trophy is in your hands, you're hoisting up in the air. Is that a fair assumption of Barry? I mean, is he the kind of guy that says, go on out there, enjoy every game, you're number one, rah, 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 pile it up? Or is he very conservative?
Well, he's definitely more on the conservative side. Before every game, he tells us, you know what, we're ranked number one in the country, and that's great and all, but we have to prove it. We have to go out on the field, play our hearts out like it's our last game, and we have to prove that we're number one, not only, and kind of like live up to the hype kind of thing.
Teams work hard to earn credibility. I see it all the time, and also these victories that go with it. But being at the top can, some people will tell me this, Krista, and I've seen it. It can also lead to a bit of what they call cockiness. And it can bite you on the bum, if you know what I mean. Is this something that you got to eliminate very quickly, this cockiness, and go out there and pretend it's your last game?
Yeah, I think it's really important to remain level-headed. Going out there being ranked number one, it's definitely something that we have to live up to, right? But we have a really good group of girls, and nobody has their head above, like, nobody's cocky on our team. Everyone's conservative. Everyone knows that we have to earn that number one spot.
You started playing soccer at the age of four. Your family signed you up. That's how the story apparently seems to go. Was that the thing you wanted to do back then, or was there another sport that you had your eyes set on?
Well, my dad's very traditional. He wanted me to play soccer, and my mom wanted me in dance, and I tried out both. I tried out a bunch of things. I tried out gymnastics, I tried out volleyball, tried out basketball, played a couple sports in high school as well, and I just ended up being the best at soccer, and it's where my heart lied, right? My passion, and that's what I ended up following through with.
Krista Chalucci is on the line with us. She's a student with the number one women's soccer team at a university in Canada. That's Wilfrid Laurier. Now, you beat York 4-0 to start the year, and you scored a goal in that game as well. And that was the university that you once attended, right?
Yeah, I transferred from there.
Yeah, and you play them again on October the 21st. Tell us, how much fun is it beating your former school?
Well, last year, actually, it was a lot. It was a closer game. We won 2-1, and I came on as a sub, and I was eligible for this game, and I came on, and I ended up scoring a goal in the last 2 minutes of the game, and I'll tell you, it was definitely one of the biggest highlights of my soccer career, and just coming in with Laurier this year, we kind of wanted to prove a point and to York and the rest of the teams in the league, and that's what we did. We beat them 4-0, and it was amazing.
A lot of firepower on this Laurier team. There's Tanya Padron. You've got Kelsey Tika. Julia Marchese's there, I think, and Emily Brown was leading the country in scoring until you came along with a couple of goals the other day. And then Alyssa Lagonia with two goals yesterday as well. As they say, lots of players on this team. How difficult is it to keep some of these egos down, share the ball a bit, and the scoring, and perform as a team?
Well, it's important to kind of, like I said, remain level-headed. Like I said, there's no girls on this team that think they're above anyone else. Alyssa Lagonia has played on the national team. We've had some girls. We also played in England. And nobody thinks we're above anyone else on the team. We're a group of great girls. We're all really close as well. We're really close friends. And there's no cockiness. There's that little bit of competitiveness, who gets top goal scorer, who saves the shot kind of thing. But it's all for the team in the end. It's not for the individual.
I want to ask you about preparation for a game. Do you adjust for each team, or is it the same plan game after game? Is it more what is Laurier going to do, or what are we going to do to stop the other team?
Well, we have our rituals. Like, we have a pre-game warm-up kind of thing. We do the same thing every game. We listen to music. We make each other laugh, talk about the things that happen on the weekend kind of thing, just to get ourselves kind of loose and ready for the game. But it depends on what team we're playing. We kind of adjust to the team that we are facing. But in the end, it's always us. It's always us that have to make the adjustments, make the changes for to cater to the other team. But in the end, you know what? We have to kind of just remain, again, level-headed and play our game and not worry about the other team.
I've talked to some people who've seen this Laurier women's soccer team play, and I mentioned some names before: Padron and Tika, I think Marchese and Brown and Lagonia. And I'm sure there's others on there that deserve recognition with their names mentioned as well. But let's get to you. I mean, let's hope this doesn't happen. Assume you get hurt and you miss a few games. What happens to this Laurier women's soccer team? Because people who see you play tell me that you're the backbone of the squad.
We've had a couple people get hurt. There's been a couple injuries throughout the preseason. I actually did get hurt in preseason. I sprained my ankle a bit, but I'm fine now. But again, it's a team, right? We all have to adjust to who gets hurt, who can't play, who's ineligible, and in the end, it's all for the best, right? Like, if there's an injured player, we do have a really well-rounded bench. Some of the players on our bench are better than the teams that we're playing, the starting lineup of the teams that we're playing. So the reality is that of a good team is that we do have a good starting lineup, but we have a great bench as well. So it's great to know that if one player gets hurt, another great player can come in as well.
People get, professional soccer players, they get paid to perform. I would imagine it's different for amateur soccer players, for that matter, for the girls at Wilfrid Laurier. But how do you get better as a soccer player?
Get better. For me personally, I did a lot of training over the summer with my friends preparing for preseason, specifically one friend. We do a lot of preparation for preseason. We do have a preseason that's really, really intense. We're always focused, and we just have one thing in mind, and that's the national title. And every time we play, every time we practice, that's our goal. It's our goal to be better every single day and to get to where we want to be at the end.
People seeing a Wilfrid Laurier women's soccer game, and they see you as well, without a program, what's their impression when they see this player running down the field with a sweater number 10? That's you, right?
Yeah, that's me. I like to think that I finish most of the chances that I get. I also like to make plays and set up other players on the field as well. I don't know. Specifically me, I don't know. I can't really say anything about myself. I haven't seen myself play, but people told me I'm a little bit feisty on the field.
Yeah. Physical too, right?
Yeah. I do have a yellow card so far, but I didn't agree with it. But
now you told everybody about how physical you can get in a game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yeah. Sports. Athletes, they digest it. I mean, it's part of their blood. But you're at university for another reason. That's to get an education. How do you push the button and stop or I don't know maybe what I'm trying to say here other than focus more on education than on sport? How difficult is it?
Well, it's good to have balance, right? In university, you have to kind of balance your sport, your school, and a social life, so to speak. It's kind of hard, but the girls on the team are excellent, and the coaches are excellent. We have a great program here at Laurier, like a good support system. If you ever need any extra help in school, they're always here. And definitely school is important, right? And the Laurier Athletics, kind of, they recognize that. And it's great here. I always have, like I said, I have the girls to help me out if I need any assistance with anything. But it's definitely, you definitely have to know how to balance everything. Have a good time, focus on soccer, and do well in school. And it's hard to balance everything, but most of the girls on the team actually do better the semester that we are in season than the second semester. So
we see this a lot in a lot of other sports, particularly football. And I'm wondering if this is the case in soccer at the university level. Do players fake injuries?
On the women's side, I don't think they fake injuries that often. Again, I don't know for sure, but I've never done it. I don't think any girls on my team have ever done it. But it's definitely something that happens.
Krista, we got to move along. We appreciate your time. Good luck, soccer player.
Okay, thank you so much.
Number one university women's soccer team in Canada. Sounds pretty good, doesn't it? Yeah, that's Wilfrid Laurier University. Krista Chalucci, key member of that team. We're going to pause a bit. Sports update is coming up next. And then we're going to talk with a football player, with Wilfrid Laurier, who I've known since he was in high school. He played at Markham District High School. And he's getting close to that time where he gets his degree and moves on. And for him, it could be professional sport. He's that good. And he's being looked at by CFL and NFL teams. We'll tell you all about him and the loss yesterday by his football team. Stay with us. It's Sunday morning. My name is David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
It's time to hear about the superstars of tomorrow. It's Sunday morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Two minutes after 9 o'clock on this Sunday morning, September the 25th. Well, our next guest, I had a chance to follow him for a number of years. He's from the Markham area. Got a wonderful mother and father. Actually, his whole family is. And they always out to cheer on their son. We're talking some football, and we're talking about Shamad Chambers. By the way, my name is David Grossman. This is Sunday morning, and it's Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Big football game yesterday with Western and Laurier. And it's always a barn burner when these two teams get together. Western still undefeated. They knock off Laurier 34-28 in Waterloo. Laurier had a chance late in the game, but their quarterback, Shane Kelly, was picked off in the last minute. Very unfortunate. And Shamad is a wide receiver for the Golden Hawks. And not only is there interest in him, with a lot of talk from the CFL with the college draft next year, but I'm told that at least one NFL team likes what they see from him. And if you see him play football, you know he's got it all. He's got great hands, got a lot of speed. What sits on top of his shoulders is working, and working very well. I'm talking about his head. A great young man, and a bright future for him as well. We're very fortunate he's taking some time to talk to us this morning. The day after, Laurier loses. Shamad's on the line right now. How you doing, Shamad?
I'm good. How you doing, David?
Very well, thank you. Sounds like we just woke you up.
Not really. I've been up for a little bit, actually.
You know, I look at these standings, and I see Western at the top, and then I see the tie with Windsor and Ottawa and McMaster, each with a 3-1 record. Then Queens, and then I see Toronto, each with a 2-2 record. I'm saying to myself, there's got to be a mistake. Where's Laurier? And then there's Guelph and York tied with Laurier with a record of 1-3. It's, you know, you got to say to yourself, whoa, something went wrong this year.
We still believe in our systems, and we still believe in our coaching staff and all the players around us. We've had a tough goal to begin the year and stuff like that. I think that the loss against Windsor kind of shocked everyone, and then we lost against Queens. And that obviously was a massive shock. We had a good week of practice, and I think that we came out against the Mustangs, and we really put it to them. They're the number two team in the country, and I think that was the closest game that they've had. You know, the season is still, we still have a long run. We got to win out to be able to really hold our position in the playoffs. And once you get into the playoffs, it really doesn't matter what your record is.
You're right, Shamad. But you look at the start of the season when Laurier went over to York. For three quarters, there was a game. This was against a York team that hadn't won a football game in 4 years. And yes, Laurier prevailed 46-7, big second half, big fourth quarter. And then, as you had mentioned, the one-point loss to Windsor sort of set everybody back a bit. And then you go to Kingston, and you get hammered 58-35 by Queens, one of the worst defeats by a Laurier team in the school's history. And then yesterday, with an opportunity to win the game and knock off this number two-ranked Western team, losing 34-28. So the math is there. One win, three losses. You now have three games. I guess we could call them all home games. Next week, Laurier celebrates its 100th anniversary as an institution with homecoming, and Ottawa comes to town. Then you got to cross the street and play Waterloo, which is struggling for a win. And you end the year off against McMaster, against a guy who used to coach at Wilfrid Laurier. It's now in a situation where some people will believe you got three games left, you got to win them all to secure a playoff spot. Is that a fair assumption?
Oh, yeah. Actually, we have four games left. Our last game is against Guelph as well.
Oh, okay. I missed Guelph. Right.
Yeah. But, yeah, we have to win them all. But that's the mentality that you have to have every time you step on the field, that you have to win all the games. We're not thinking about, oh, we can lose some one of these teams. We're thinking that we can win them all. And, again, we believe in our systems, and we believe that we're going to get it done. You know, I think Coach Peer and Coach V on the defense, our defense coordinator has done a great job with all of our players. I think we just have to really commit better, commit more, stay longer in the film room if that's what it's going to take for the players, practice harder, and just make the plays when they come. That's basically what we have to do at this point.
Your quarterback, Shane Kelly, was 27-48 for 325 yards, a couple of touchdowns, but he had four picks in the game. He's got a lot of receivers from Heap and Juergens and Surya. Were you surprised that you're only thrown to just a few times? You had three grabs for 25 yards. That was it?
No, I wasn't. To be honest, I haven't been healthy for the last couple of weeks, actually. I've been suffering from an ankle injury. So I completely understand that. I'm not really worried about my stats. I just wanted to win the game at that point. You know, Shane's gonna throw to whoever's open, and at that point, I really had no give on my ankle, and he was starting, and Dylan was going, and Mark was going, and Russ played a really great game. And at that point, as an older guy on the team, all you care about is just getting the win and just getting past that week. That's all that really matters. You just, for me, I just want to get in the playoffs and be healthy, and I'll be fine.
Can't believe you're in your fourth year at Wilfrid Laurier. I thought it was yesterday I saw you playing at Markham District. What was it like, though? Because you also had an opportunity to play in the summer, representing Canada in Austria at the World Championships. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
It was a great experience. It was great to be able to represent my country. You know, not a lot of people can say in the football world, at least, that they represent Canada at the World Cup, you know, the World Cup of football. And it was a great experience. I met a lot of great people, you know. Being coached by Greg Marshall obviously was a change, but it was fun to be around him and Coach Haler. They're really great people. They really, you know, over the course of the summer, my family was going through the trial and stuff like that, and Greg Marshall was very supportive, and Coach Haler was very supportive as well. And, you know, I enjoyed it a lot. I think that there's not much you can do past that other than play professional football. But once you get to say you represent your country, that's I feel like that's something really big.
Our guest this morning, Shamad Chambers, a student at Wilfrid Laurier University, darn good football player, pass receiver as well. You know, Shamad, when a team, I was going to say sucks, but that's not fair. But when a team doesn't do well, it seems as if everybody is lumped into the pudding. You know what I mean? And it can have this mental effect and can get frustrating when you look at yourself saying, well, we're this close. We lost a game in the last minute. We lost another game with an interception. How hard is it for a guy like you and others, for that matter, on the team, experienced veterans, to pull yourself out of a rut?
You know, we've experienced a lot of adversity while we've been at Laurier, especially the fourth-year guys. This isn't the first time we've been in a jam, especially for myself. This isn't the first time that I've been in a jam. I'm just going to keep being calm and keep being a leader on the field and keep trying to bring the energy out of the young guys. And, you know, there's going to be a sense of urgency when we get onto the field. But bottom line, like, you got to have fun while you play, and you got to just make it happen. And, like, you know, it's tough being 1-3. I personally haven't been 1-3 when I've been at Laurier, but I'm not scared. I still believe in our systems, and I still believe that we can make it out of this hole and go to the playoffs. And once we're in the playoffs, I think we're the worst team to play for anybody. So, you know, I'm not worried. I'm not worried yet. I think we still have a really great chance to make the playoffs, and I firmly believe that we're going to make the playoffs, and our defense and our offense is going to fly by the end of this year.
I'm going to mention three letters. I want you to take it from there, okay?
Yep.
NFL. What are the chances of Shamad Chambers playing in the NFL?
To be honest with you, it's an interesting situation.
I know the San Diego Chargers have expressed interest in you. What's going on between them and you?
You know, I try to keep my head out of that. It's a crazy situation. It'd be an unbelievable experience, especially because Vaughn plays on the team. Vaughn Martin plays on the team, and
you know him from Western.
Oh yeah, we know each other very well. I actually spoke to him last night about the game. He was pretty happy we lost, but you know, it was all fun and games. And at that point,
is that your goal? I mean, is it? Here you are coming to the end of your university career again. I find that hard to believe. For you, you want to play pro. I think you have what it takes to be in the CFL, definitely. But others are looking to try that extra step, to try down in the NFL. Is there a lot of interest, or is it just San Diego?
For me, at this point, it's early, right? So I've heard interest. I've heard about things from other people while I was at East West and stuff like that. But it was whispers and stuff like that. So I didn't really put too much onto it. And is that my goal? That should be any kid's goal, to be able to make it to the NFL, right? It's the greatest league in North America. And, you know, the different, like, I really want to help my mom in the future to be able, my mom and my dad and their financials and their financial problems that they do have. So would I love to play in the NFL? Oh, unbelievable. I would absolutely die to play in the NFL and have a long career there. You know, God willing, that could happen. And I'm going to work as hard as I possibly can for me to be, put myself in a great place to be wherever I'm wanted. But at this point, you know, I'm just really trying to focus on getting our get my university out of this jam and trying to be the best leader I can be here at Laurier.
You're looked upon as one of the top 10 in the 2012 Canadian Football League draft. And one of the scouts, when describing you, thought that you could be the best pro prospect. You're explosive. You can run. You got good size. You're reliable. You throw all that together. Have we missed anything in trying to describe Shamad Chambers? Think we got it all, don't we?
Yeah, I think that's pretty good, actually.
For you, though, it's been a tough struggle. I remember writing a story about you and your family, and then others came along, did the same thing. I'm talking about what affected you off the field, the tragedy, the pain from the past. Your older brother, Jonathan, was kidnapped, killed by gang-affiliated men. Made you tougher, made you stronger, made you become the leader in the family. Has that changed you considerably to the Shamad Chambers growing up?
Most definitely. Obviously, when something like that happens, it kind of gives you a massive shock to the system. And mentally, you can take it either way. And I obviously took it in a direction that was beneficial for me and my family. But you know, it's been difficult. We got the verdict for the man who set up the whole murder on Friday, actually, right before the game. So, like, it was a very tough day. We were in court for about 4 or 5 hours, and it was a tough day to sit there and see the people who were responsible for my brother's death. The other thing that was tough about it was, you know, right after that, getting back to Waterloo and kind of rebooting your system to be able to go and play a football game the next day. It was extremely tough. I'm glad that the trial and everything is over now, and my family, my mom, my dad, they really got justice over this situation, and our justice system shows that it is working and that there should be some kind of peace of mind for me and my family. It's been a tough road, but, you know, I feel great about where my future holds, and I know my brother is smiling down at me, and I hope I'm making him proud.
Well, you certainly are, and you got a great future ahead of you. You know I'm a big fan of yours. Last year, Ottawa played Laurier. It was another one-point loss, 32-31 for Ottawa in a semifinal game. You go up against the GGs this coming Saturday, homecoming at Laurier. I know your family will be there. It's going to be a heck of a game. 100th anniversary for the university and a must-win game for Wilfrid Laurier. We wish you well, and we thank you very much for your time, Chamad.
Thank you. Take care of yourself.
Thank you again. Chamad Chambers, wide receiver. Wilfrid Laurier, definitely going to be one of the picks in the CFL draft. Who knows? He could even make it down to the NFL. We're going to take a break and then come back and continue our Sunday morning discussion on amateur sport. My name is David Grossman. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. Good morning. Hope your start to this Sunday is a pleasant one. My name is David Grossman. Well, basketball, Canada's senior women's national team got off to a strong start. They beat Mexico 72-45, the opening game of the FIBA Americas Championship for women. Local kid Kalisha Keane from Ajax, she's been on the show before, had a game-high 15 points, 10 of which came in the fourth quarter. Now, can you imagine what it's like looking up to a youngster who's 6'7"? All right, now, last week, he celebrated his 15th birthday, 6'7". When you look up, you can start with a sore neck. And then playing basketball against him, I can imagine, and he's only a teenager. He's going to be tough to play against and to try score a couple of points against. But he's good, and he's real good, and he's accomplished a great deal, not just for himself, but in playing for Canada. And we're fortunate he's joining us right now. His name is Chris Agee, and he's also attending St. Andrew's College School in Aurora. And I should point out, St. Andrew's beat Upper Canada yesterday in football, 24-22, was a nail-biter. He may have been at the game. It was nowhere near last year's championship where Upper Canada beat SAC 40-34, and probably one of the most exciting high school football games I've seen in the last 25 years. I don't know. Maybe he was there. He's on the line right now. Chris, how you doing?
I'm doing well.
Were you at the game yesterday?
Yeah, I was at the game.
Was it? It sounded at the beginning as if it was just going to be a pancake. And Upper Canada was up at halftime. And for some reason, SAC just blew it open in the second half. Is that a fair assumption of what happened?
Yeah.
All right. For you, it's been a great summer playing basketball. You ended up with 2 medals. And let's start with the first one with Team Ontario. It was a gold medal. You dismantled, I guess is the best way of putting it, British Columbia, 71-44 in the final, 15 points and 5 steals. Is that an average game for you? Can you describe your average game playing basketball?
That was a pretty good game for myself. Normally, I score around 15 points and I get a couple of rebounds and a couple of blocks and just do whatever I can do to help my team win the game.
Now, tack on what happened at the Canadian Under-15 Championships, where you were chosen the most valuable player. Were you surprised by that?
Yeah, I was really surprised by that because there are so many good players on our team. We had a lot of really, really good players, and to be chosen was a real blessing.
You were picked, I would imagine you got the call to play for Canada at the FIBA Americas Under-16 Championship in Mexico, where the Canadian squad won a bronze medal. What was the experience like for you playing on the world stage?
It was really different. It wasn't something I was really used to. It was a really good experience to get chosen at such a young age and to play with all the really, really good players that are on the team.
How tough is it for a youngster like you, not only to be, I guess, away from home for such a long time, away from your family, but also to be learning what life is all about at the age of, I guess for you, it was 14 and having to make some difficult decisions at time.
It was pretty difficult because at first I'm used to being kind of sheltered at home and just being out there with traveling around the world playing basketball and being the youngest guy, it was kind of difficult for me.
What's it like going to an all-boys school?
It's different. It's a different experience.
I would imagine it's not hard to find a guy like you walking down the hallway because of your height.
Yeah. Yes.
Canada's qualified for the World Basketball Championship for your age bracket, Chris, and that's going to be held in Lithuania next year. Tell us, are you still eligible to participate on that team?
Yeah, I'm still going to be a year younger than most of the guys on the team. It's a U-17.
That'll be another interesting experience for you.
Yeah.
So big-time competition for Chris Agee. You're now back at high school. You're adjusting. How strange is it going to be or will it be for you to get the high-profile competition that you're used to now, I guess, at the high school basketball level?
I'm just going to try and do my best and try and play my best and help my school win games. Our school is trying to improve our basketball team, and I'm just going to try and help us accomplish that.
You had a chance to show your talent when you went up against some other good players of your age caliber in this country, for that matter, around the world. Did you learn anything from them as well? Did you pick up any hints on how to improve your game?
Well, when I played against international teams, a lot of the guys my size, they play on the wing, and that's something that I'm going to try and do, try and play more with a perimeter-oriented game.
Now, here's the thing I find very interesting. You've accomplished so much on the hardwood, and yet you've only been playing basketball for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
How did all that start for you, the game? I mean, kids growing up playing sports, you're in the backyard, you're kicking a soccer ball around, shooting a hockey puck or a ball against a garage door or whatever. How did basketball become part of your life?
Well, I really look up to my older brother, and he always really enjoyed playing basketball. So when I got the chance to play basketball when I came to St. Andrews, I really got into it, and the coach at St. Andrews College, Mr. Ludwig, he introduced me to my rep team coach, Coach Enzos, and he really helped me develop and helped me get a lot better, and that's how it all started.
Chris Agee, some coaches can play a huge role in the success of athletes, and I've heard stories where it's the complete opposite. Some athletes are just fed up with the attitude and what they call the pressure that some coaches put on them. But for you, it's been all positive, as you mentioned, from your high school coach to your club coach. Is it fair to assume that the coach who may have had the most impact on you so far as a basketball player has been Ryerson University basketball coach, and for that matter, Canadian cadet coach, Roy Rana?
Yeah, he's been a really good influence in my life. Just him giving me the opportunity to showcase my abilities on Team Canada, and that really helped me get to where I am today.
You kind of get down, though, when a coach will pinpoint some areas that need strength, that need a little bit more work. I know some athletes that think that they know better than coaches do. How do you react to a coach giving you advice and advice and more advice? You eventually want to draw the line and say, okay, enough already, I know what has to be done?
No, because you always just want to get better, and anything the coach is telling you is just trying to help you improve.
Let's get back to your age. You're still very young, 15 years old, 6'7", playing basketball. How hard is it to deal with not only the spotlight, but also knowing the pressure tends to get turned up a couple of notches? You know, the dreams you're thinking about now of after high school, possibly scholarships, going to college here in Canada, maybe the United States. I don't know, whatever your choice is. Playing pro maybe one day. And then, of course, the big money that starts to get in the picture as well. How do you, as a youngster, a teenager, deal with all this kind of stuff?
I just try and focus on doing my best in school and doing the best I can on basketball right now. Just keep on working hard so I can put myself in a position to succeed later.
You were mentioning that you look up to your brother. I'm going to have some fun with that. You're 6'7". Is your brother taller than you?
No, he's 6'2".
All right, 6'2". But this is something that you look up to him for, and that is the fact that he's studying his academics. He's at Princeton University. And your sister and your parents have been very supportive. I had a great talk with your mother not too long ago, and I could tell that here was a mom that was beaming because she was just so proud of the success of her children. And when we talked about you, she was just, I guess, reaching for the stars because she sort of led me to believe that it's all there for you. You just have to go and get it. Do you set some high expectations for yourself, Chris?
Yeah, I always just want to be the best I can be and always set the highest goal for myself I can.
Well, everybody wants to be the best they can be. Sometimes it just doesn't work out that way. Are you prepared to deal with the frustrations and the setbacks?
Yeah, because you always have to have a backup plan, and you always have to just persevere through all the tough times and all the difficult times.
Now, I know you got some sound grades. I mean, you're great at basketball. What's it like being 6'7" and playing the trumpet in the school band at St. Andrews College?
It's just, you always have to diversify your options. So I really like playing the trumpet, so it's something that I really took to once I came to St. Andrews, and I just really enjoy it.
Talk to us about the St. Andrews basketball team this coming season. Is this going to be a contender, or is this a rebuilding year?
We have a really good team this year, and I think we're a program on the uptick, and we're just trying to improve every day and trying to have the best season we can.
Now, I would imagine when you get to college, you're going to deal with players a lot more talented than you have right now. The competition's going to be a little bit more stronger. How does some other team in a high school game with St. Andrews deal with a 6'7" forward like you?
I don't really know because it's different because not a lot of teams are used to playing against guys my size in our league. So I see a lot of different types of coverage, and they play a lot of zones, not much man-to-man.
I would imagine for you, you would have your way on the basketball court at the high school level. I would think you also have an opportunity to dunk whenever you wish. Is that something you enjoy doing? And do coaches sort of say to you, all right, Chris, take it easy. We don't want to jam it down the throat of the other team. We don't want to really cause any kind of a commotion.
I really do enjoy to dunk. It's a really fun thing to do. But the coaches really do encourage it because it's an intimidation factor.
Really?
Yeah.
And what are your thoughts about that?
I just try to do the best I can do. And if that means dunking or if that means shooting, I'm willing to do it.
Are you the kind of guy that stands under the basket and people just throw it up and you just jam it in, get the garbage rebounds, which is what I call it, for the points? Or are you the kind of guy that really works hard to get every basket, every point he possibly can?
It's a little bit of a mixture of both. On different parts of the game, I get some easy baskets, but a lot of it I have to work hard for it.
So let me ask you again, are you thinking about pro basketball? Is it too early for you as a 15-year-old, or is that part of the dinner conversation that you have at home with your family?
I think it's a little bit too early. Right now I'm just focused on trying to get into the best university I can get into, and then we'll see what happens from there.
And is that university south of the border? Are you planning to join your brother at Princeton?
The university I would like to go to is in the States, but I might join my brother at Princeton, or I would go to a school that's strong academically or athletically, like Stanford or Duke.
Other than music, basketball, studies at St. Andrews College, what else do you do there, or is that it?
I'm part of the outreach committee at St. Andrews. We raise funds for different charities in the area.
Well, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Got to get up there and see you play. Chris Agee, 6'7", a couple of pounds short of 200. The numbers give him away. Basketball player, and a very good one, too. Could be the top Canadian prospect when he graduates from St. Andrews College in Aurora. And we thank him very much for joining us. We're going to take a break. He won a gold medal for Canada. Also a bronze medal for this country at the FIBA America's Under-16 Championship. Chris Agee from St. Andrews. My name is David Grossman, and it's Sunday morning on Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590.
It's time for the Dean of College Sports. It's Sunday Morning with David Grossman on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590. All the moves like Jagger, I've got the moves like Jagger, I've got the
moves like Jagger. Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590, Sunday Morning. My name is David Grossman, quickly approaching the top of the hour. Before we get to our next guest, the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport. They've nailed another one. This time it's Jacob Zorzella Manners, who is from Toronto, and he's a Vaughan Road Academy, former Vaughan Road Academy student, and now working for the City of Toronto. Three-time Canadian triple jump champ, three times. And they found during a, I guess you would call it a random check, that he was in violation of the anti-doping rules that are set out. And he received a 2-month sanction for that. He's allowed to participate and train with his teammates, but the suspension runs until October 22nd. 2-month suspension. In his case, they found an adverse analytical finding for cannabis, I guess otherwise known as marijuana. So information, I guess, to athletes, stay away from drugs and, for that matter, performance-enhancing drugs as well. It's going to be a busy, you know, maybe someday they'll all understand that you got to go out there and do the best you can and not get involved with other stuff, if you know what I mean. It's been a busy week for me. I've been replying to a lot of people by email and phone calls who think that we're spending too much time on the subject of concussions. And I say to myself, really? I mean, too much time possibly could be saving somebody's life? I don't think we're spending enough time. I mean, these are brain injuries, and this is pretty serious stuff. Regardless of the sport, it's not pretty. And getting hit in the head is also not pretty. No matter how many events and conferences are going on, I'm just wondering whether the education is working, because it's happening and the numbers continue to escalate. People are getting worried. And joining us right now to talk about the subject of brain injuries is a physician at McGill University's Health Center. He's a professor at McGill, and he's also affiliated with the Montreal Alouettes. Dr. Scott Delaney's joining us. How you doing, Doc?
I'm good, David. How are you?
I don't know. I get all razzled by people who say, you're spending too much time talking about concussions.
We need a few more people to get riled up about it, like yourself. More people aware of the risks and dangers and the long-term effects of concussion.
I mean, this isn't a Band-Aid. I mean, this isn't a cut. This is something that can have an effect on a person's life.
That's, you know, what we're seeing now is not only the acute effects of a concussion, but we're seeing athletes 10, 20, 30 years later after they've left a sport, and we're seeing what has happened in the years since they've stopped playing, the gradual decline in mental functioning and the cognitive loss and the neurological sequela that happen and the depression that affects so many athletes who have suffered concussions previous in their career.
Now, you've been around athletes, amateur and professional, who have suffered from concussions. When does the world of sport, and maybe for that matter the medical field and the governments, start to jump in and say, you know, we have to seriously take measures to stop hits to the head? I mean, there's a lot of talk. There are, as I mentioned, there are a lot of professional development sessions. There are some media opportunities. But are we waiting for somebody to seriously, and I mean serious, maybe a fatality? When do they jump in, and what can they do for that matter?
Well, I mean, if you look at some of the different sports, and it's you're hitting the nail on the head, sorry the pun, that sometimes it does take a catastrophic event. And you look back at different sports, even in football, American football, there were a number of deaths years ago to the point that President Roosevelt threatened to outlaw the game, and that's really what had the NCAA come into being. And again, there were deaths, and that's what caused a standard organization to be created to look at football helmets. Same things happened in skiing. You know, if you look at why did ski helmets come about, well, within a year there were two deaths. There was Sonny Bono, crashing into a tree and another member of the Kennedy family that died while skiing after a head injury. I think that some of the sports are starting to move in the right direction. The problem is sometimes the highest profile leagues don't move in the same direction. So if you look at international hockey, for example, and the Ontario Hockey League, they have rules where hits to the head are illegal and result in an automatic penalty, whereas the NHL hasn't moved in that direction. So at the amateur level and at the international level, they do have the rules in place, but still on the sports highlight reels, you see the hits from the NHL that go on time after time. And I just hope we don't have to wait until somebody is killed from a hit to the head for there to be changes at the high-profile league level.
You're an emergency physician, Dr. Delaney. Are there times where you will have discussions with athletes that suffer from a concussion? And I don't know if there's such a way as saying a minor concussion or major concussion. It is still a brain injury. Are there times where you have discussions with them and they want to masquerade it because sport has taken their lives? I mean, just in control of their lives, that they just want to get back into the game, knowing full well that they have an injury?
Well, that's, you know, one of the things, David, is obviously in this day and age, we all have incredible technology at our disposal. So I could have a million-dollar MRI machine. I could have, you know, a team of neuropsychologists waiting to do a battery of neuropsychological tests. With a concussion, the vast majority of times I'm still dependent on a very basic thing to occur for me to make a diagnosis, and that's for an athlete to come forward and volunteer their symptoms. And they will not do that if, first of all, they're not aware of the signs and symptoms, and secondly, they may be aware that they have a concussion, but they don't understand the risks of continuing to play. So in your sort of intro, you had mentioned education, and I think education of athletes, coaches, physicians, trainers, and parents is probably the most vital step in decreasing the incidence in terms of fair play and what is allowed and not allowed, and in terms of decreasing the long-term effects. So when somebody does suffer a concussion, they understand that this is something that should be taken seriously and they should seek medical help, because if they don't, they're at risk for serious consequences in the short term and serious consequences long-term if they go on to suffer repeated concussions.
Dr. Scott Delaney is joining us from Montreal. You're the go-to guy. I mean, you're the team physician for the Montreal Alouettes, for McGill University sports, and for that matter, even Cirque du Soleil. And you also look at several boxers in the Montreal area. I wonder, what are your thoughts when you go to a pro game, or even for that matter, a university game, and you see football players throwing their bodies at each other? Yeah, they got helmets, but they still throw their bodies at each other, the hits that occur. And then you watch these boxers smashing heads. I'm not even going to get into UFC because I have my own personal beefs about that. What goes through your head as a professional, as a doctor, whose job is, I mean, whose career is in helping fellow human beings?
Well, one of the things that goes through my head is when you read studies about the incidence of concussion, it's like an iceberg. You're only seeing the very tip, because we've done research where professional athletes, university athletes, and not only that, but just recreational athletes do not have their concussions diagnosed. They don't understand what a concussion is, and if somebody doesn't understand what a concussion is, they're not going to come forward. So oftentimes I'll be reading studies and they'll talk about, you know, a concussion incident in professional football or soccer of, you know, a few athletes per 1,000 athletes out there. And I just scratch my head and say, they don't get it. The athletes are hiding their symptoms or they're not coming forward. You know, you could, you know, after a kickoff return on a professional football game, you know, you cannot examine 12 players on the sidelines in the CFL. After every play, and there are a number, you know, sometimes a kickoff is equivalent to almost a car crash in terms of the energies that are out there, with people crashing into each other, running at full speed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of it is always, the problem has been that, you know, we send people for CT scans and MRIs, and we always tell them it's normal, looks normal. And so people think, well, there's nothing really going on in there. It's just, what, I don't know, there's no scarring, there's no bleeding, it can't be that bad. Now we're getting to the new set of tests where we are seeing anatomical changes where with it's more research tools and certainly not readily available to people out there, but we're seeing little bits of scarring in the axons, which are the nerve cells of the brain, and athletes who have suffered a concussion and feel like they're doing well, and then an athlete decades later who feel that they're fine as well, we see changes in the brain cells. And that sort of gets an athlete's attention, where we can tell them, we see scarring in your brain. This is so you've got changes that have occurred, and we know that the brain can't heal itself, so that's permanent.
What are some signals that parents should look out for when they see their children playing contact sports?
Well, the biggest thing, you know, is if you look at symptoms of a concussion, the two biggest ones are headaches and sort of being confused or disoriented. Some athletes will say, I was dinged or I had my bell rung. But there's also other things, and parents are very good at picking up on these things, where the athlete just is not themselves. They don't have the same energy level. They seem a bit sort of down or depressed. They may have visual changes, balance problems. And when the athlete, if it's a student athlete, goes to school, they can very quickly tell you that they're not themselves. You know, it's more difficult to deal with a professional athlete at some levels because professional sports is very often repetition through the week, and a lot of the professional teams don't hit each other, and they go over plays, and there's little variations on them, and sometimes they don't understand it. I've had professional athletes come up to me on a Thursday after a Saturday game and say, Doc, you know what, I thought I was okay. I sort of have a headache that I often do, but I was in the bank, and I was trying to add two bank statements together, and I couldn't do it. And it wasn't, you know, 17,946 plus some other odd number. It was 350 plus 240. And they didn't understand it because they hadn't sort of stepped outside of their comfort zone and tried to test their brain. Student athletes will come and see you Monday afternoon and be, Doc, I was in calculus, and I can't do it. And I can't afford to go on like this and miss a semester of school. So it's almost easier in some respects to deal with the student athlete than it is a professional athlete.
Now, you've seen your share of brain injuries in sports. What are your thoughts about, and some people are going to think I'm really losing it here, but what are your thoughts about protective headgear for young soccer players?
Well, you know, again, soccer, if you look at many of the studies out there, soccer has the same incidence of concussion as hockey and football. And that's not intuitive to many people, but when you think about it, you know, they're running around at the same speeds as football players are, or rugby players or what have you, and very often they're jumping towards the same point in space when they go to get a ball. And when you talk about concussions in soccer, people think it's heading the ball. It's not heading the ball that's usually the problem. It's head-to-head contact or elbow-to-head when people jump up to go towards the ball. There is, in the United States, a standard for protective for soccer, but it's not a hard shell helmet as you would have in football and hockey. It's a soft shell helmet, almost like a headband, like an old is.
I think someone's trying to get through to you on your line.
They might be listening in.
Yeah,
some questions.
And unfortunately, we're running out of time. We're going to get you back on and continue this discussion because I find some of your comments to be extremely right on, and a lot more people have got to hear about it. Dr. Scott Delaney, physician with McGill University Health Center, Professor McGill as well in Montreal, and the go-to guy for the Montreal Alouettes. We very much appreciate your time.
My pleasure, David.
Thanks again for being with us. Got to wrap things up. As I said, great lineup of guests. To all of them, thank you very much for sharing their stories and helping us learn more about amateur sport. Igor Enriquez, producer of Sunday Morning. Dan Riccio is the director of technical operations. My name is David Grossman. Enjoy your day. This is Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.